Welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Security Testing. I'm Ben.
And I'm Tom.
And this is the podcast where we talk all about security testing. Today we're going to dive in to LLMs and the value they have in security testing, vulnerability management, all those kind of areas. So Tom, let's kick off. I mean, I don't want to go over this too much, right? Because I'm sure we're probably the 70 millionth podcast to discuss LLMs. But let's just briefly go over the value of them generally, and then we can get into how they apply specifically to security testing.
Sure. I think the real value in LLMs is two things. It's the ability to process a large amount of data, the ability to take tens of thousands of lines of logs or files or you know, gigabytes of music, and be able to refine it and distill it down into the key relevant and important elements. And it's the ability to do rationalizing and effectively do a lot of the sort of low-level thought processes that a person would traditionally have to do without experiencing the same sort of levels of burnout and exhaustion and frustration that would happen if you asked a person to do that every day of the week.
Okay, that sounds brilliant. Why is it so polarized?
There's lots and lots of reasons why LLMs polarize. I think there's a lot of fear mongering in the market. You know, people talking about I can't let a tool do this because it can hallucinate and I can't therefore trust it to do things. For some tasks I completely understand that and I respect why people are resistant to that. But for a lot of things, people just aren't capable of achieving. You know, people aren't doing things right. There's lots and lots of in security testing especially, there's lots of times where people are not reviewing every change that occurs to determine whether or not it needs to be tested because thousands of changes are occurring and you can't have a person to do that. Suggesting that you put an LLM in front of all of those changes and find the ones that might need to be tested, there might be some resistance to begin with because people say, I can't trust the LLM. What if it misses one? But when you point out to them, do you actually do that at the moment? If they say no, then obviously it's a flawed logic. The other reason that LLMs are a bit polarizing, I think, is because people, I don't know if there's just an ego thing with it, you know. A machine can't do that. That's a very sophisticated, higher level thought process that only a person's capable of doing. Only I'm capable of doing this thing. You know, that's. I think I understand why people like to think that way, because for many years vendors have promised that tools are capable of doing things that only people are capable of doing, and it's turned out that the tools aren't capable of it. But as more and more people use these tools, use language models in their day-to-day life, as it becomes a much more familiar part of everyday operations, I think those barriers are going away, and I think people are realizing that actually maybe this is a genuine revolution, and if you find the right use cases for it, it is really capable of doing certain things. It may not currently be capable of writing particularly brilliant LinkedIn posts. You know, people can tell, I think, if an email or something like that has been written by LLMs, but there are other things that it absolutely can do, like rapidly prototype some code or pass vulnerability output from a tool and from another tool and figure out whether or not they marry up together. And that's I think, where there's a lot of strength and a lot of opportunity and where people are warming up to the idea, shall we say, of using LLMs in their daily life in security.
Okay. Let's bring this back to security. I put it to you, Tom, that at this present moment with AI, security teams within businesses are witnessing a net negative in relation to productivity with AI. Let me just explain what I mean there by a net negative. Sure, there are probably successful implementations of AI from a productivity perspective within security teams, thinking maybe things like Copilot, possibly from a security standpoint when it comes to Microsoft, However, anecdotally speaking, I have no research to back this up that's at granular level, but from what I'm hearing, there are very few cases of where CISO security teams have implemented LLMs specifically and seen a massive productivity benefit, seen a massive efficiency gain, basically a successful implementation of this technology. However, what near enough every security team is facing is other departments in the business rushing out to use the technology. In many cases, think sales, marketing, legal, finance, are seeing a productivity benefit from using this technology. However, it's just another thing to secure, right? It's another thing to secure. We've now got to consider things like prompt injection. We've now got to consider things like them leaking, them losing data, another part of the attack surface that they now need to protect, right? It's got governance issues attached to it. It's got technical security issues attached to it. It's got massive incident response implications. Think about the Canadian airline that we saw with the chatbot. Mm-hmm. Net negative. What do you say to that?
Secure by design, you know, it all goes back to that, right? In the last few years, there has been a big push to consider security as a factor when building any new tool or any new technology. But it does feel a lot like we don't know what the design or what the security principles are for securing AI yet. And so people have gone ahead and just put security on the back burner when building these tools, and security teams inside businesses are, to an extent, left scrambling, trying to find ways to be able to secure this completely unknown entity. And the other problem is it's generally a black box. Yeah, you've got things like RAG where you can sort of see a little bit of the logic and the decision-making going on. But you, as a general rule, you provide some data in, it provides some data out, and what happens in the middle of that, it's really hard to be able to assess whether or not there are security issues there. So, yeah, I mean, I think I can see why a lot of people are experiencing a net negative. I think we're figuring it out, right? I think we are learning that there are things that can be done to mitigate those challenges. There are some interesting innovations coming out in terms of creating models where there is less risk, or like there isn't you exposing data to that model. That context is not then passed on so that other people can access it. But also, I think we're just learning to find use cases that aren't intrinsically risky anyway. You know, when I gave the example earlier of passing changes, right? You initially, people might be concerned about the idea, I'm passing all of this intellectual property into this tool. What's it then doing with that data? What happens if it discloses that data to somebody else? But you can build a model. You can build a pipeline by which the actual output is never, it doesn't get to generate text. It doesn't get to generate an actual output in a way that means that you could ever, even theoretically, disclose information passed into it or intellectual property passed into it by another person. So I think, you know, I think as these design principles get designed, or security principles get defined and ingrained into the design process, I don't think that's going to be a problem for very long.
But how do we get, how can we fix the net negative by increasing the productivity gains we as a security team get from LLMs? I'm not talking about how do we improve our efficiency in securing them, but how can we take some of the burden away from things like vulnerability management in order to take away a lot of the existing security work so we can focus on some of these new challenges. I'm sure many of the security teams are quite excited about securing this new technology. You know, it's a new objective, it's a new challenge to conquer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm not a security engineer, but I'd hazard a guess that if you spoke to them, a lot of them would prefer to be getting on with securing the future than treading the same old processes for the same old things that we've been doing for the last 15, 20 years. So, you know, have you got, you know, are there any examples of how this is, there are early signs of these benefits coming to bear?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way we get to that is by asking security teams what part of their job they hate the most, or what part of their job they spend the most of their time doing. Ironically, a lot of the time, the answer will be the same. You know, there's a lot of repetitive tasks in security. Even though we've automated, you know, even though we've done our best to automate. And the reason for that is because security largely comes down to understanding risk and managing risk. And in order to do that, you need to understand context. And automated tools historically have not been good at context. But these days, with language models being able to interpret and actually, to a degree, understand that context, that means that you can actually start to hand over some of these low-level decisions to these automated tools. For example, the one that I'd mentioned earlier, changes, right? Being able to pass every ticket within a business and figure out, every ticket produced by a developer, and being able to figure out which of those are risky ones and which of those are fairly harmless, so that you can pull out which ones need to be scrutinized for security testing.
Brilliant. So just to be clear here for the people that are listening, we're talking about, if we're doing this manually, we're talking about the equivalent of having a security person within the business sit down and manually review every single ticket and every single pull request for its potential risk to the mm-hmm. business, which naturally is very unlikely that any business is actually capable of doing that from within the security team.
Sure, but what businesses do a lot of the time is they have a dialogue between the security engineer, they call them clinics, you know, security engineer and the developer or the engineering team or the product team, in order to understand the changes that have recently occurred. That is a bottleneck in a process because they can't pass those tickets. And effectively, by putting a model in between those tickets and the deployment of something, you abstract the requirement for these people to be having this conversation. You can build up a context about what's changed, and you can have the context about the security requirements of the business, and then you can train a model to be able to make decisions off of the back of that without that bottleneck of having to have all of those meetings. The next thing that then you can do is determine what the correct course of action to take once you've found the things that need to be tested is, right? That should be the next stage in a security testing program, is actually orchestrating the tools that you need. And there are lots and lots and lots of these tools. There are hundreds and there are thousands of them, and they're all good for different things. If every change needs a different set of tools, then again, you either need a person to be making the decisions about what to orchestrate, or you need a model to do that, right? You can train a model to be very good at understanding what different tools are capable of and what they're not capable of, so that they can, say, fire up Zap or fire up VAS when you need to, and here's a few little things that VAS or Zap or Burp Suite or Tenable haven't been able to do. Here's you know, a few little actions that a person can then come in and pick up and carry out in their day job. And the real beauty of that is it means that while a person does need to come in and do some testing, they're not doing testing that could have been done by an automated tool. They're really focusing on the areas and the things that only a person is good at and have been removed from the sort of the low-hanging fruit detection, the boring part of their job.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's low-level decision-making, I think, is a really good way of explaining it. For the people listening, when we talk about low-level decision-making, we're talking about, particularly within vulnerability management, we're talking about the process of making a security decision on risk based on a potential change that's come through. We're talking about seeing a vulnerability from a code repo scanner, like a SAST tool, and taking the results of a DAST tool and going, this line of code is talking about this part of the system. They're both projecting a cross-site scripting vulnerability. Maybe it's the same vulnerability. So maybe rather than reporting these as two things, I could send them both to one engineer and classify them as one vulnerability. These are the kind of decisions or the kind of assumptions, tasks, that security engineers pick up on a daily basis. And quite often, it's not, like to my point before, it's not conquering security objectives. It's simply trying to make sense of the output and pass it off to the next person in a way that's going to be more efficient for them. Making those lots of low-level decisions is something that a model can be trained to do, you're telling me.
Yeah, and also, you know, talking about taking in that information and providing out quality output, that's, you know, that is also a thing that models are brilliant at being able to do more generally. You know, you... controversial potentially here, but we talk a lot about the idea that soft skills, as they're quite commonly referred, are something that can be lacking in security and security teams. You know, highly technical people can sometimes struggle to communicate information in the most effective way. And while, you know, I've said models are not necessarily particularly brilliant at writing social media posts, what they are really, really good at doing is summarising a vast amount of information in a very, very human-readable way. So the opportunity there to be able to provide these summaries and these scopes of work for people to be able to carry out as testing, and also then when they're producing their results, when whether it's an automated or a manual test has found vulnerabilities, being able to summarise those in a way that is usable and usable by different people, usable by the project manager so they can understand things at their level, usable by the developer so they can understand things at their level, and usable by the executive committee as well. This is, you know, these are tasks that currently security people are failing to do. And I think models are a brilliant, brilliant opportunity to be able to actually start accomplishing that and start just improving the communication between security and the wider business.
Makes complete sense. Makes complete sense. And I guess myth debunking time, because I'm sure a lot of people tuned into this podcast thinking, yeah, it's a security testing business talking about LLMs. When are we going to see AI hackers? When are we going to see, you know, fully AI systems that can compromise businesses and all that kind of fun stuff? So let's just, I just want you to debunk that for a second. Where are we in context of telling an AI to compromise a business or compromise an asset or a web app and allowing it to use its own intuition to do that? How advanced are we there? And is it anything to be concerned about?
I have to be careful here not to be either dispelling the possibility or sowing too much FUD about the current landscape. But I think we're a long way away, not least of which because currently we have automated capabilities to compromise systems without any need for AI at all, right? You have exploit kits that are popping boxes left, right, and center, and they don't need this sort of additional decision making. They just need to rely on a few zero days or a few disclosed vulnerabilities, even, in order to gain those footholds. I think where AI is being used in the attack landscape is in being able to scale things like phishing programs, you know, being able to make hyper-personalized messages to a large volume of people so that when you're sending them those emails, they really do feel like it, or some of the more recent ones, sending them social media and actually having communications back and forth with a person mm-hmm. that is actually an AI model with an objective that is potentially malicious. But yeah, I don't see an AI hacker, you know, tearing through your internal infrastructure and compromising your domain controller anytime soon.
Yeah, and we're talking about reports of things like, for example, an LLM has been trained to exploit SQL injection within a web app, something that an open source DAS tool has been capable of doing for 15 years.
Exactly. Right?
So yeah, fine. Okay, so, you know, as always with these podcasts, we like to help the listeners to understand what kind of things they could be implementing in their business today. So, What ways are there to implement? What are some of the considerations straight off the bat, Tom?
Well, I think starting by looking at where the bottlenecks are within your security testing program is a good place to start. Are you struggling to figure out what needs to be tested? If so, just download your last 100 PRs or 100 tickets. Throw those through an open source model. It can be an offline model. It can be something like GPT if you want to, but yeah, it can be an entirely offline model. You know, you've got things like OLAMA where you can deploy a local on your machine version of a model, so you're not sending it out to anybody else, and just say, here is this data, Where should I focus? And it's not going to be perfect, but it's probably going to be quite good at giving you a bit of a heat map of your estate, so that you can start to refine in your program. If you're struggling to provide information, or developers are struggling to resolve the vulnerabilities themselves, and they can already start to, I'm sure they're using things like Copilot to be able to write code and write code more securely, but they can start to also use it to say, here is this vulnerability report, here is the code, marry these two things together, you know.
I feel like this is the part of the podcast where I have to insert a disclaimer to check with the relevant people before we start downloading things like AI models, because it causes more of a problem. I don't know if you saw yesterday, but I think it was Wiz discovered a critical vulnerability within Olama and their software, which caused leakage of some kind. And I think this is going to continue now, isn't it? Especially considering that people do just want to download. Need to remember that it is then something on your machine or something on your server that needs to stay up to date and could potentially become an attack vector.
It is, but you know, if we, this is why we need to look at AI and models as just another software and another technology, right? They need governance in the same way that your browser or your email provider needs governance. You know, there should be an approved list of things that you're able to install. There should be some requirement for like an administrator or an administrative user on your machine in order to install it. You shouldn't just be throwing it everywhere and assuming that it's absolutely fine. But with that rationale, you know, in place, with that governance in place, I think you can, you know, there's no reason why, especially with the offline models where you're not sending data to a third-party location, there's no reason why you can't start to use these and at least test them out, right? We're not saying that you hand over the responsibility for security to these tools. We're saying you see if these tools are able to provide you with an efficiency gain in your role and your responsibility. That's why Copilot's called Copilot, not Pilot, right? It is not driving the program. It is supporting the person in being able to perform their job.
Cool. So to summarize that point, you know, download something, start having a play with it, start seeing where and why you can find efficiency gains. It allows you to do some of the things that you were previously doing. Also consider looking at commercial tools where they've actually built the models into the tool and that is starting to make the formation. And that lends me to my next point and the last point we're going to make today, which is I see a big difference between buying a tool that takes a bunch of the processes out of the team and carries out those processes because it's there's a model built into the tool, but it's a tool itself. And a co-pilot system where you're almost, it's almost chatbot style, isn't it? Where you're sort of being assisted, if you would like to be assisted, during your daily work. It's the same technology quite often under the hood, but a different application of the use case. And I guess we're favouring Copilot because it's not so much giving it decision-making power, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we're not at the point where we have the trust or the confidence in AI to be able to hand over every responsibility. We're already in a position where it is ingrained in our day-to-day lives, and a lot of the time we don't realise that AI is going on beneath the surface to be able to make decisions. You know, when you Google something now, what's actually happening behind the scenes, you know, to make sure that that first, second or third link is the link that you want to, is a form of AI, right? But we're not at the point yet where we would trust AI to be able to do things like determine whether or not a vulnerability needs to be resolved or accepted as a business, or certainly not all organisations are at that point. But they are at a point where when they're trying to make those decisions, it can be a useful soundboard and a useful place to refer to, or at least it can help them to understand which of the 100 vulnerabilities they might want to start at when they're trying to make those kinds of triaging decisions. We'll hopefully move towards higher degrees of confidence and higher levels of accuracy that mean that we can hand over some of those responsibilities rather than just use it as a supporting tool. But in the meantime, you know, there's very, very little risk by using these as a support mechanism.
Well, thanks everybody for listening today. That's the end of our podcast. We're back in a couple of weeks with Lessons from a Security Engineer, where we have a special guest joining us. a security engineer that's worked in various large organizations building testing programs and solving a lot of the challenges that you guys might be looking at solving today. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music. And we look forward to speaking to you in a couple of weeks. Bye now.
Bye.